Podcast. Hello and welcome to Three Peeps in a Podcast, episode 110. In today's episode, we will be getting Sky Sports legend Jeff Stelling on. But before we do that, we just want to address something. It's not very easy to talk about, but one third of the Three Peeps, Mike Pedley, actually passed away on VE Day. He'd been battling on and off with cancer for the last three-ish years, and unfortunately, he passed away on Friday. So yeah, not very easy to talk about. We've got myself and Rich on here, and we just wanted to almost dedicate this episode to him. And obviously, we will be doing something in the future as more of a memoriam, if you like. But it's been a tough weekend. Rich, help me out.
Yeah, obviously, like you say, Patch, it's a tough time. We know it's coming. All three of us knew it was coming. But when it does happen, it does hit you for six. You know, such a young lad, no age really, late 30s, 39. But he was integral, in this podcast. He was, like you say, one third, a very important third of the podcast. Funny lad, easy to get on with. Thought it was great to his family, his mum, Kath, and we're trying to battle on. In his name, really. So
yeah, every time we do the podcast, it will make us think of him. And even when he started this battle three-ish years ago, it was I want the show to carry on. And he dipped in and out. I think the last time he was on was actually on his birthday back in September last year. But he obviously has kept it listening throughout. But yeah, it's a tough time, and I've had so many messages from people in the Instagram community, because he was quite a big part of the Instagram community with his Bits of Bristol and his street art Instagram accounts. So yeah, obviously they didn't know the full story, and it came a bit of a shock to those guys. But and friends and family on Facebook as well. It's been I hope he knows how much he will be missed and how much he was loved and cared for. Three Peeps in the Podcast. As I said, we've got a special guest today, and this guy is a legend of Sky Sports. And it's the voice of football over many, many years, and it is Jeff Stelling. Jeff, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, fellas. How are we doing?
Yeah, not bad. Thank you.
Afternoon, Jeff.
The reason that we've got you on is we just want to just explore your career a little bit and talk about what it's like to be on Soccer Saturday, one of the most popular shows on TV, not necessarily at the moment, but in the past. And really talk a little bit about your career and your work that you've done with Prostate Cancer UK. And I should say that that's one of the reasons and how I've got hold of you is through the work that I've been doing with Nick Butter, and obviously you're a big part of Prostate Cancer UK as well. So do you want to just quickly start on that?
We've had a sort of relationship for 4 or 5 years now, and it's been fantastic. And I've absolutely loved this. You know, we've done, 29 marathons now, walking marathons, you know. I mean, obviously, it pales into insignificance with Nick Butter, but never mind. We've had a great time doing it, and we've raised a few quid. And of course, the big thing was to raise awareness. You know, prostate cancer. You know, most people have no idea, you know, where their prostate is. In fact, most people can't even pronounce it, because people still have a tendency to say prostrate cancer. You know, so just to try and raise a bit of awareness, and hopefully we've helped in a small way.
Yeah, you've done a great job, and obviously having that link with Sky, it gets the exposure, and it's been an absolute stellar effort from you, Jeff. So congratulations on your charity work, and it's been greatly received by prostate cancer, I'm sure. Let's take a step back and just talk about Jeff growing up, I believe, in Hartlepool. Is that correct? What was life like in Hartlepool?
Yeah, Pearl of the Northeast Riviera. look, I had a great childhood, really. You know, just a working class boy, lived on a council estate, and you know, my dad worked in the steelworks, my mum was a nurse. So, but you know, it was, just a sort of fun time, really. Those were the days. There were days of innocence, you know, where you could go up with your mates and play football until it got dark and nobody worried about you. You know, there was precious little traffic around. You know, obviously, no internet, nothing like that. So you made your own entertainment. You were lucky you had a TV when I was growing up. And if you had a colour TV, well, you were really wealthy. We certainly didn't for many, many years. But I had a fantastic childhood. You know, I went to a couple of great schools. I wasn't wonderfully academic or anything like that. But by and large, enjoyed it.
So when did you actually, did you start to study anything in the media related in terms of like college time or how did that sort of development into this career come about?
Yeah, no, I don't think there was such a thing as, you know, media studies or anything like that in those days. No, I'd always wanted to be a journalist. You know, basically, I was into sport, very into sport. And really, one of the reasons I wanted to be a journalist was, A, I thought probably my best subject at school was English. I thought I could, you know, I had a decent vocabulary and so on. And there used to be a sports paper, we called it The Green, and lots of towns had them, which came out every Saturday night after, you know, the day's football. And they had a letters page. And I used to write into that letters page religiously. And the star letter would win, I don't know, £5, something like that. And my letter was the star letter every week.
Wow.
And I thought, well, this is great. I must be good at this. And it wasn't until I joined the newspaper itself that I realised my letter wasn't just the star letter. It was the only letter. And that most of the other letters were totally fictitious and were written by the sports staff on the newspaper just to fill the page. But
is that the Green Un? Because I think we had the Green Un in Bristol. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, there were so many of them. There were Green Uns and Pink Uns all over the country. You know, sadly, I think virtually all of them demised now. But yeah, so that's where I got the inspiration from, really. And when I left school, I had a couple of uninspiring offers to go to university in places I didn't really want to be, doing courses I didn't really want to do. So I applied to a couple of local newspapers, the Hartlepool Mail and the Sunderland Echo. And I was lucky enough to be offered jobs at both of them. I took the one in my hometown, and that's where it started. Mm.
And when did your passion start? Obviously, we know you're a big Hartlepool fan, and I should declare that myself and Rich are both big Bristol City fans, but we'll get onto that later. When did your passion develop for Hartlepool of the football team?
I guess when I was six, seven, something like that. And a lot of the time, it was, in fact, I mentioned it earlier, you know, there was no internet, there were no mobile phones, you know. You couldn't go on your PlayStation, so you had to have other interests. And initially, I used to go to Hartlepool, and they'd open the gates 10 minutes before the end. And we couldn't afford to go to the game, so they'd open the gates 10 minutes before the end, and me and a horde of other sort of 7, 8, 9-year-olds, we all surge in to see the last 10 minutes. I mean, most of the other people were trying to get out at that stage. but that's how I first got interested in it, really. Yeah. And then from time to time, my sister would take me to games, and just became a passion of mine.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Were you actually a footballer yourself? Did you like having a kick about?
Oh, yeah. Well, I loved having a kick about. I mean, as the years went on, you know, I realised that the level of my ability and the limits of my ability. So I was a Sunday morning footballer, you know, I played Sunday morning football
right.
About 16 till I was 42, I think, something like that.
Wow.
Just fantastic. I mean, I loved Sunday mornings. And after that, when my two sons were born, I sort of lived those Sunday mornings through them, you know, being the sort of taxi driver and sort of part-time coach and occasional referee, and eventually ended up running one of their teams for them. So sort of the involvement in Sunday morning football has gone right through my life, really.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. So back to your career, you had a few breaks in the journalism field. When was your sort of venture into TV, so to speak?
Well, I've been in radio. I worked in radio in the Northeast, and then moved down to London, worked there for LBC, London Broadcasting, and then moved to what was, in those days, BBC Radio 2, but of course it became 5 Live. And then I moved into TV. I use the word TV, you know, roughly, really, because it was TV AM, which was the sort of forerunner of GMTV.
Yeah, I remember that well.
Yeah, it was rotten, to be honest, you know. I had 18 months of purgatory. The reason it was rotten, because I worked in the sports department and basically had no sporting outlets and no real interest in sport at all, you know. And I would be, it's a bit like now, actually, I virtually never work. You know, we had a rota, which I was off for a week, and then the following week, I'd be in, and my task would be to shoot one and a half minute video, and I had the whole week to do that. And the following week, I'd be on overnight shifts, and the only thing you had to do on an overnight shift between 9 in the evening and 9 in the morning is write one minute sports bulletin. I was bored out of my mind, you know. I thought, if this is TV, I don't want anything to do with it. But, you know, it wasn't real TV. I mean, you know, I mean, a little story to illustrate the fact that there's so little interest in sport. We were getting close to the derby, a couple of days before the derby. Whoever was program controller or head of news, whatever, it said, you know, can we get one of the runners in? And I said, well, one of the runners, you mean one of the jockeys or one of the owners? Or no. Can we get the horse in on the morning of the derby? And of course, I said they were insane. And they said to me, but you know, you see Red Rum in TV studios. I said, Red Rum is a 20-odd-year-old gelding. These are 3-year-olds who are priceless. You couldn't afford the insurance, even if anybody was mad enough to do it. But trying to persuade them and explain things like to them was like banging your head against a wall. And I just had to get out.
Jeff, who was the big hitters back in the day when you started out? Like, who was the biggest the sports broadcaster, kind of who you wanted to emulate, kind of thing, growing up?
It was one. I mean, there were lots of great broadcasters. Obviously, the old Dickie Davis was, you know, phenomenal in his day. And he went on to the Jim Rosenthal's of this world, Steve Ryder. But the one who is head and shoulders above the rest is Des Lynam. He was the one I loved to watch and loved to listen to, you know, and he was knowledgeable and urbane and humorous. And they say, don't meet your heroes. And the first time I met Des, you know, he was absolutely fantastic. And we only had a passing acquaintance, really. I've only had a passing acquaintance during our careers, but he's always been encouraging, enthusiastic, kind-hearted. You know, I just haven't got a bad word to say about him. And a brilliant, brilliant broadcaster.
He was known as the housewife's favourite, wasn't he? Back in the day, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah. You know, I mean, we're very dissimilar in terms of broadcasters, in the sense that Des was so laid back and so chilled, and those, you know, little asides that he had. You know, where I do it all a million miles an hour, so it's very different.
Yeah. How did you get into working for B Sky B or Sky as they're now known? How did that come about?
Well, it was a few years down the line, in fairness, because I've been a freelancer for quite a while, really. And, you know, which was an edgy but interesting life, which meant I'd done all sorts of things. I mean, from, well, the most bizarre thing that I did was present sumo wrestling on one occasion for Channel 4. I knew nothing about it. I did an American football program, the World League of American Football, the first couple of years that it was, you know, took place in Europe. So I did that for terrestrial TV as well. Did all sorts of stuff, worked in Eurosport, so I was commuting back and forwards to Paris. Sky were reluctant to have much to do with me, to be honest. Until one evening, the head of sports news rang me And I was in Paris. It was a late Sunday evening. And he said, I've got a presenting shift for you. And I said, oh, that's great. Fantastic. A breakthrough in relationships. And he said, yes, tomorrow morning.
2 a.m.
And I was in Paris. Okay. But I was determined not to let it go. So I managed on Sunday evening to, and I was finished. By the time I'd finished work at Eurosport, about 6 o'clock that evening, I booked a flight, got on the last flight back from Paris to London. The next morning, I was at Sky at 4:30. I didn't know anybody, you know. I didn't know how the system worked. I knew nothing about it at all, but somehow scrambled on the air for a first bulletin at 6:20, which I still remember. With Bob Friend, who was a fantastic broadcaster, and Penny Smith, who is a definite one-off, and got through it, got through the first day, and that was a foot in the door. So, having got
this early 90s, Jeff?
That would be, 94, something like that, 93, 94. Right. Okay. And then I got to move over to Sky Sports, which was even better.
Yeah, and so... Have you ever actually been one of the two on Sky Sports News at any point, fitting in or?
No, not on Sky Sports News. No. Okay. Basically, in those days, the biggest sports news bulletins went out on Sky News, so they were the ones that I.
All right.
And when I went over to Sky Sports, I mean, they took me over to do. Initially, I went over to do things like snooker. And pool. And when I went over there full time, it's a little story again, is that I've been offered a job in Atlanta in the States, basically been in charge of their European sports coverage. And I've been over a couple of times to meet the people, and I decided I was going to take the job. And I put my notice in at Sky. And then the head of Sky Sports was a guy called Dave Hill at the time. Called me into his office and he said, you're going nowhere, sunshine. He said, what do you want to present? And I said, well, he said, what are your passions? I said, football and golf. And he said to me, he said, go and see the golf producer. He's at the bottom of the corridor. He said, go and tell him you're the new presenter. So I did. But fortunately, you know, we all realised very, very quickly indeed, if you're doing football, you can't be doing golf as well because they both take place over the weekend. So so I never became a golf presenter and went on to do football instead.
Yeah, so let's talk about the Soccer Saturday, which, you know, is something that everyone's familiar with. And, you know, you were saying about that you used to play sort of Sunday morning football, that the banter levels that happen on Soccer Saturday must replicate some of the levels of banter you had on a Sunday morning. When was the birth of that? And were you involved from the very start?
Yeah, I was, because it was there was a program on Sky Sports called Sports Saturday. And we used to take it in turns. There were three of us who used to present Sports Saturday. Paul Dempsey, Julian Walters, and myself. And it was a bit like Soccer Saturday, being a football programme with no football. This was a sports programme with no sports. You know, we only touched on football at 4:30. I don't know why. You know, when we had a video printer, copying the BBC, when they went to the video printer, we did. But eventually, football became more prevalent. And our head of sport then was a guy called Vic Wakeling, who was a fantastic man. And he had the idea that football would not only dominate Sports Saturday, it would take over and we'd drop everything else, basically. And I remember the conversation with him. And at that stage, the idea was it was going to run from 2 o'clock till 6, or 2 till 5:30. And I remember the conversation with him. And he said, do you think it's feasible? Do you think it's possible? And I said, yeah, I think it's possible. I said, but what you need is somebody who's absolutely immersed in it. I said, you can't have somebody who's doing one show in three. I said, you need to give it to one person, you know, and let him throw himself into it, know the stats, know the stories. And he said to me, have you got anybody in mind? And I said, well, I have. And that was it. So, yeah, so, since it became an all-football show, I've done it ever since then.
Is that so as we go, like 20-plus years now, has it?
Yeah, it's... I think it's switched to football in 1996. So it'll be 24 years now.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, growing up for when Bristol City were away, and obviously when I started playing football on a Saturday, I would be watching Teletext steadily change 3:02, I think it was, on ITV on Teletext. But when Soccer Saturday came along and you had the scores trickling through on there and going to the different commentators, etc., it was an absolute dream. So, and just talk about, before we get into some stories on Soccer Saturday, talk a bit about your passion. Obviously, you're a passionate Hartlepool fan. And what I always looked out for was when a Hartlepool score came through, and just your eyes would steadily change if they'd scored. How was that, and the emotion that you bring to Soccer Saturday?
It's fantastic. Obviously, I can't be in all the games, which is disappointing. But the great thing is, with supporting a team like Hartlepool, Nobody sees us as a threat. Nobody sees us as a rival. So I can get away with it, you know, and get away with showing my colours, if you like. If I was a Liverpool fan or a Manchester United fan or even a Bristol City fan, I wouldn't be able to get away with it. I think it's great that people have accepted that over the course of the years. Of course, there are times when when it's not so great, you know, when we got relegated from the Football League, basically with the last kick of the game at Newport, when Newport scored to beat Notts County. They're pretty desperate mode. You're bearing your soul in public. But on balance, it's been fantastic. I mean, I remember going to Bristol, yeah. I remember going to Bristol City for the second leg of semi-final playoff.
Many years. Yeah, we were going to touch on that.
I wouldn't touch on it too much.
Might end the interview quite quickly.
Yeah. No.
Were you actually there, Jeff? Were you in the ground?
I was in the crowd. Yeah, I was in the crowd. I had Jonathan Pearce bellowing down my ear, because he was doing commentary for BBC Radio at the time, and I was sitting, you know, with the fans, but directly in front of him, and it was a fantastic. The atmosphere, you know, the atmosphere was just sensational when that.
Well, we've had the 125 year celebration recently, and there's been a lot of people saying, what was your favourite moment, Ashton Gate? And for me, that's definitely in the top three, alongside the Crystal Palace playoff game, the Man United game, and then the Hartlepool, the fact that, you know, with that Christian Roberts goal in the last minute, I don't want to rub it in, but that was the loudest I've ever heard Ashton Gate. And obviously you were there, so you experienced it.
The stands were literally shaking, weren't they? I mean, literally shaking. I mean, it's incredibly intimidating to be an away supporter in that situation, you know, in despair. And I still talk to some of the players about it. Now, you know, Mickey Barron, who was knocked unconscious during the course of the second half there, and they all remember it was just an amazing occasion. Disappointing for us, but brilliant for you. But Ashton Gate's always been, you know, a great place to go. And we've been there a couple of times on the prostate cancer walks. And by the way, the ground is it's very different now from what it was then. But it's always been a heck of a difficult place to go. And look, that's what we found. We played pretty well, but just one of those things.
Yeah, yeah. Can we talk a bit more about Soccer Saturday in terms of, there must be some memorable moments, too many to mention, but some of the banter that you have, for particularly with Chris Kamara, is one that is probably the most popular, and the unbelievable Jeff slogan, which is obviously about you, but you haven't said it. How is it working with Chris? Is it as funny as it seems?
Yes, yeah. It's like tales of the unexpected. You never know what's coming with Cammy. You know, there's been a red card at Fratton Park.
Has there?
Oh, I'm seeing you. There are so many. I remember going to him once, and he was doing it's many years ago now. He was doing Newcastle against Sunderland, so it's a time weird derby. It's a big game, and we can't show any shot in the background which might show a football, you know. So anyway, there's a penalty in the game, and I'm trying to fill with Cammy, and I remember saying, you know, who do you think's going to take it, Cammy? Who do you think's going to take it? And he looks over his shoulder and says, I think it's going to be David Sanpon. and I said, Cammy, I can absolutely guarantee you it's not going to be David Santon. So how can you be so sure, Jeff? I said, because David Santon plays for Newcastle and the penalty to Sunderland. And he was at the game, you know, he's looking at the game. But he's a great character, actually. You know, he has got fantastic football knowledge. Obviously, he's played the game, played 600-odd games in his professional career. You know, he's managed at Stoke and at Bradford City, so he's done it. So he does know the game. And a lot of people within the game, a lot of current professionals and managers, you know, will use Cammy as a sort of sounding board for ideas. You know, so I think the way you'd sum him up is he's not as daft as he looks.
When Jeff, when you go to the outside broadcast, guys and girls, how far in advance before they're on the screen do they know you're coming to them?
Oh, well, if there's a goal, you know, not at all. As soon as the goal goes in, we'll be going to them, you know, depending on what else we're on at the time. But if they're coming for a report, they'll get maybe 10 seconds notice, something like that. But that's all, because the decisions tend to be all last minute. You know, things change so quickly. So you might be told you're next, you know. Johnny Phillips, you're next. And Johnny will expect to be on within 10 seconds. But then if there's a goal somewhere else and a goal somewhere else and a goal somewhere else, you know, 5 minutes later, he might still be waiting. And of course, in those 5 minutes, something else might have happened in his game. You know, so they've got to be really on the ball, the guys who are out to get.
Yeah, it's a difficult job.
And there must be an element of, if there's a goal at Swindon and then suddenly there's a goal at Man United and Liverpool, there must be hang on a minute, Swindon, we've got a goal in the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I was told by my old boss at one time, there's more chance of hearing about a Hartlepool goal than there is about a Manchester United goal. And I said, well, what's your issue with that, you know? but obviously, there is a pecking order, and if there's a Premier League goal, that is going to come first. And, you know, it's exactly as the leagues are now. That's the order in which you would use them. Unless when you get to the, you know, the business end of the season, you know, if there's a goal in a game which would affect promotion in League Two to League One, you know, that might would take priority over a relatively meaningless Premier League goal. You know, you push that to the top of that pecking order. I think that's, hopefully, that's one of the show's appeals, is that we try and treat everybody equally. You know, if your team's in a big game in League Two and it's 3-3, the reporter there is going to be on a lot of the time. We don't just ignore you and let the score go through on the video printer without any reference to it.
Something I've always been interested, Jeff, regarding the video printer. When you're announcing the goals, and you touched on this earlier about the stats, do you get more information on your screen than we see? Because you seem to know how many goals they've scored that season, their last goal, all sorts of information that you just reel out as soon as a goal goes in. Who helps you along the way?
Well, you see exactly what I see. Look, we have got a statistician, but his role, things happen so quickly, it's very, very difficult for him to tell me things while I'm on that score. You know, if a goal goes in, I need to know. You can't know everything. I mean, you can't know everything. But if that's somebody's 20th goal of the season, I need to know it's his 20th goal of the season. And our statistician won't even try and tell me that, because he knows that's my job. And if he did try and tell me it, you know, he gets his head bitten off a bit later on. You know, if a team is X number of points ahead at the top of the table, if that's somebody's 20th goal of the season, if somebody's losing for the 8th time in 9, if somebody's conceded 100th goal, all of the sort of basic things, you know, those are things that I work on during the course of the week. So come Saturday, you know, I should know them.
That's amazing.
But there'll be occasions, Patch, you know, when, let's say a fullback from a Scottish Championship side scores for the first time in his 408 game career. We can't know that. You just can't. And that's where the stats man will come in with things like that. Normally a couple of minutes later, so you work it in later in the show. But it's a two-man team. He does the donkey work amongst the really obscure facts and figures. And I do the stuff that really, it's my job to know.
Well, it looks, that's, it looks
incredible.
Flawless.
It's an incredible level of knowledge. Yeah, it does look flawless. It's an incredible level of knowledge. And I guess as this is a Bristol podcast, how have you obviously been following Bristol City over the years and particularly this season? How have you seen our progress over the last sort of 5 years?
Well, I think the progress has been great, you know, not just the development of the ground. I think one of the big things was that, obviously, it was a couple of seasons ago when you were having an absolute shocker of a run, weren't you? You lost game after game after game after game. And the chairman sort of publicly came out and backed Lee Johnson. And look, you've been knocking at the door for so long in that division now. And everybody knows what a tough division it is to get out of. Just look at some of the clubs who are in there at the moment. Obviously, the West Bromwich Albions and the Leeds United and the Fulhams have just come down. You know, big, big clubs with big budgets as well. So I think the fact that, you know, you've been knocking at the door, it's massive credit to Steve Lansdowne, it's massive credit to Lee Johnson and the players as well. And, you know, I think over the years, you know, generally speaking, you bought well as well, which is really, really important. So, I was going to ask the question, will this be your year? But the way it's looking, it might not be anybody's year.
Who knows? It's been funny. It's obviously, yeah, not funny is not the right word, but it's a very, very strange situation and a situation that none of us expected. But I still held out hope to get into the playoffs this season. And if we get going again, we'll have Benik Afobe back and we'll have Naki Wells to choose from up front with Zizou. So it's quite a formidable strike force that we've got. And if we can get the midfield into gear a bit more, I think we had a good chance of getting into the playoffs. Rich, what do you think?
I think if we did scrape up like a Huddersfield did, I think it might be a year too early for us. I think we're still kind of, I think we need another year to embed the players in as a squad that compete every week. We're kind of up and down at the minute. And is it, like you say, the Championship's an amazing division. I do wonder sometimes if the Championship's our division that we should be in for the next 5 or 6 years, so we can compete. And then, I don't know. But I think we can go up too early. I think some teams can go up too early and it just kind of halts your progress if you sat the manager early days in the Premiership and you have to start again. I don't know. I think Championship, at the minute, I'm enjoying the Championship. There's no rush for me.
Yeah, I think that's right. But you can't pick and choose when you go up, unfortunately. But you're right. A lot of sides who've gone up, you know, after a season or two of scratching around at the bottom of the table, they'd rather be back, you know, seeing a winning team a division lower, you know, and seeing some better games. And from a manager's perspective, your reward for getting promotion tends to be the sack very early in the next season. I mean, Norwich are an exception to that. You know, they've stuck by their man. They're stuck by Daniel Farker. And great credit to them for that. And if they get relegated, then they will still stick by him. Just as Burnley did with Sean Dyche when they went down and then came straight back up under him. It's the promised land, isn't it? Of course, the financial rewards are absolutely enormous, but there are a lot of great games in the Championship, a lot of great games in every division, but a lot of great games in the Championship and some fantastic atmospheres and some fantastic players as well. And you're right, if you create the chances, I mean, Naki Wells, he showed at Queen's Park Rangers what he does. He scores goals, you know. So you create the chances. And if he's given an extended run, and I know that's, you know, not necessarily the case at the moment, then I think you'll get goals for you.
And what Rich was saying there about the Championship. The Championship is awesome. It's awesome. Anyone can beat anyone. We go to an away game and I know we've got as great a chance of winning as probably more of a chance of winning than when we were at home. So that's absolutely superb. But yeah, you're right. I would love to just see us in the Premier League. Personally, I would like to see us there. And if we come straight back down, we've had the experience, we'll go again. And I think it would be similar that we would stick with Lee Johnson. He's probably the longest serving manager in the Football League, one of the longest serving managers at the moment. So we've got that continuity.
Yeah, I think the other thing, Patch, is that if you do go up, you know, really, I know Norwich are bottom of the Premier League at the moment, but their approach to me has been the right one. because, you know, they haven't spent the family fortune on new players having got there. You know, they haven't risked the club's future, if you like. They've paid out incredibly small amounts for the players who have come in, given those who got them there an opportunity. And if you look back, obviously, the obvious example of a couple of years ago is Fulham, who made mass changes, spent an absolute fortune, put themselves in financial difficulty, and went straight back down. And Aston Villa are in danger of doing the same thing this season. You know, so I think it's great to get there. And fans will want you to spend the money. I've got no doubt about that at all. But I think you've just got to think one step ahead and say, look, if this is for one season only, that's fine. But we're going to make sure that if we go back down, we're going to be in as good, if not better, financial shape than we were when we came up.
Yeah. It's all about sustainability, isn't it? And I think Steve Lansdowne, having created a very successful stockbroking firm, has got you know, availability to get that going. So let's move off of Bristol City. Just a few more memorable moments from you of regards to Soccer Saturday. One that stuck out for me was something I watched the other day about Jimmy Glass in the last minute at Carlisle.
Yeah. Yeah, that was in the early days, obviously. But and Nigel Pearson was in charge at Carlisle at the time, and there'd been a sort of three-way scrap to avoid relegation between Carlisle and Scarborough and Hartlepool, and we got out of it a couple of weeks beforehand. You know, Carlisle were, in my view, really, really fortunate because they'd signed Jimmy Glass on an emergency deal because they didn't have a goalkeeper. They didn't have a goalkeeper because they'd sold their other two. So I felt when we were in that scrap, that shouldn't have been allowed. But it was. And of course, it's gone down in folklore now. I remember the pictures coming in, you know, seeing Scarborough's game was finished probably 5 minutes before Carlisle's game, you know, and I can see the fans sitting on the pitch thinking that they had survived. And then, of course, Jimmy Glass, you know, Carlisle win the corner, Jimmy Glass goes up. And that one moment made him a footballing legend. You know, ironic for a goalkeeper, isn't it? But it wasn't his goalkeeping that made him a legendary figure. It was scoring at the other end. It was a classic moment.
I wonder if there's ever been such a legend for a football club who's only played like three games for the football club. Must be quite outstanding.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and great for him, you know. I mean, from the show's point of view, it was a fantastic moment as well. I mean, I felt sorry for the Scarborough fans. But those end-of-season pictures, you know what they're like, the difference between the agony and the ecstasy. And we could see that because we had cameras at both grounds. And, you know, though my heart went out to the Scarborough fans and players, I knew what a great story it was that just developed at the other end of the country.
Absolutely. So what does the future hold for you in terms of Soccer Saturday, Jeff? Is it continue going for the foreseeable, or what's the thought process? Who knows what's happening with football, mind you?
Sorry?
Who knows what's happening with football, mind you?
Well, that is the problem because, you know, yeah, the plan is to, you know, to carry on and for the show to carry on. But at the moment, you know, it's hard to see what will happen next season. The Premier League, well, yeah, they might play behind closed doors for a time. But our show is about more than the Premier League, you know. Our show is about the EFL, it's about the National League, it's about Scotland. And I wonder how many of those leagues are going to be staging games of any sort on a Saturday during 2020. And, you know, hand on my heart, I would say, if I was to offer an opinion, I think not many. Championship might carry on. I don't think League One and League Two. It wouldn't surprise me if there were no League One or League Two games played for the rest of this year, and likewise in the National League. And so I'm not sure where that leaves us as a programme, to be honest. But look, fingers crossed, that's a worst-case scenario, you know. So fingers crossed that things improve much more quickly than maybe they look like they're going to improve at the moment. And the football is back. And if football's back, Supper Saturday I'll be back, and hopefully I'll be back as well.
I'm sure you will.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's just move off of football very, very quickly. And just, I want to just touch on your stint at Countdown. How was that? You did that for 2 years, from 2009 to 2011. How did you find that as a change from sport?
Yeah, 2 years, but three series. So so I did twice as long as Des Lyon. Yeah, it was fun. It was fun, but it's hard work. And you know, we would record programmes in batches of 15. So you'd record five programmes on a Monday, five on a Tuesday, five on a Wednesday. And Des warned me beforehand. He said, by the time you're recording that 15th programme on the week of the week, on the Wednesday, he said, you will be tearing your hair out. And it was a bit like that. But I worked with some fantastic people, obviously Rachel O'Reilly and Susie Dent. But the producer I got on with brilliantly, he's a massive football fan, and that's basically why I got the job. His name's right. Jamie Anidi, and he's a Blackpool supporter. So it was good fun. But in the end, the sort of life balance wasn't right with Sky Sports and Soccer Saturday. I started doing midweek shows at those days, and Champions League, and Countdown. And I was never getting home, basically. So something had to give, and it wasn't going to be the football. That was my conundrum, if you like. But in the end, I decided that Countdown had to go. But I had three great series there. Yeah.
Do you like the game show sort of format? Would you consider doing a game show in the future if the right one came along?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, you know. I did another game show called Alphabetical for ITV for 2 years. It had been a massive success. In pretty much the same format in Spain, where it ran for 20 years. But it was incredibly difficult. The difficulty was that was we had a big jackpot, a massive jackpot. It would have been the biggest daytime jackpot ever won on UK TV. But nobody could win it. It was just too hard to win. So finding the right format is incredibly, incredibly difficult. If the right thing came along, I've done screen tests for other formats, a television version of Scrabble, which didn't really go anywhere. I was asked to present a program at one stage called, I think it's called Freeze Out, which was a combination of a quiz with curling, which sounds bizarre, and was. And I couldn't do it in the end. It didn't fit into the schedule. So a mate of mine, Mark Durden-Smith, did it. And I think that lasted two series as well. You know, it's very difficult to find a pointless, or another chase.
Jeff, have you been approached by any of the reality programmes, the jungle, the dancing? Or been tempted by any?
Yeah, I mean... many years ago than that, it was suggested to me. I did a tiny bit of ballroom dancing when I was like 18 and 19, only because it was a fantastic way to meet girls. so that was suggested to me. But that takes place, they recall that in the football season. So
of course, yeah.
That's impossible. And it is a real big commitment as well. But there are, if the right sort of reality show came along, then I'd be very happy to do it.
Brilliant. In terms of the Super Six that happens on Sky Sports, sorry, I've just gone back to football, but the adverts that you've done for that have been really, really good, really funny. Do you enjoy doing those sorts of things in almost an acting space?
Yeah. They've had some fantastic ideas, that is for sure. Everything from, when I was sort of Lord of the Manor with my butler and portrait, yeah. Stelling Manors, Stelling Towers, I think it was, through to singing at Christmas with Tom O, Charlie and Tiss as the sort of elves in the background. Look, it's fun in retrospect, you'd put it that way, because... It makes me realise how difficult it must be being an actor, because it is so slow moving. You know, the production of these things is so slow moving. You think, well, this is a 30-second advert. How can it take 3 days to shoot? You know? Yes. Which makes me think, you know, if you're doing a movie which runs for 2 hours, I mean, I would find it intolerable, you know, just intolerable. Let's just do it one more time. You know, there might be some sort of slight nuancing of a phrase, or, you know, I've stepped 2 inches too far forward there, or, you know, or else they might just want to have another take for the hell of it almost, you know. I did an advert 2 years ago for Carlsberg with, it was a sort of pre-World Cup advert with Ian Wright and Paddy McGuinness. And it was long by the standards of ads. It ran for a minute, but it took us 3 days to shoot the thing. And at about 7 o'clock on the third day in the evening, Paddy and Ian and I were just taking one step forward through this mist. And we've done this probably 30 times. And the director said, we'll just do it one more time. And Wrighty absolutely exploded. We will not do it one more time. You've got your take. We're going. End the story. Finish. Cut. And it was a bit more colourful, the language, than that. But, if you're used to working, you know, as footballers are out there, as I am, at a pace, you know, and where the stuff you do is live and you can't retake, it can be frustrating.
And your pace is 100 miles an hour on Soccer Saturday. And I often think, oh my gosh, you can explode in a minute.
Yeah, but that's part of the fun of it. You've got to try not to peak too early.
And it makes for such great viewing. I don't support any team apart from Bristol City, but I get have such a vested interest in some clubs, but just from the way that you talk about them.
Yeah, and that's part of the fun of it, you know. And we obviously over the years we tried to create some characters as well. You know, you go back as far as I think one of the first ones was the Good Doctor. You know, Kenny Duker, who was a part time footballer and a part time doctor. So we always called him the Good Doctor when he scored. We've had
James
lots
Brown.
Of you know, characters. Sorry,
James Brown.
James Brown, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the late and lovely Adam Stansfield. We always used to say, you know, Lisa will be proud. you know, so there were lots and lots of things like that. And we've always just tried. At the end of the day, football's a, you know, if you ask Steve Lansdowne, football is a serious business, and it's big money involved. But it's also entertainment, and we can't afford to lose the element of fun. And that's what we try and bring. We try and bring information, but we try and do it with an element of fun as well.
You guys look like you're having hours of fun every Saturday, but has anything ever happened like during the breaks? Any arguments or corpsing when obviously people are just laughing as you come back from the advert? Anything that you can bring to light that we might not know that happened?
Oh, yeah, you know, I mean, it's not all sweetness and light. You know, the producer or the director and I, we can have some good shouting matches during those commercial breaks, you know. And particularly, I mean, I remember one day a few years ago, actually the first day of the season, the very first day of the Football League season anyway, and we were about half an hour in, the video printer just stopped. You know, first day is a big day for most football fans, and it just stopped. And you know, so during the commercial breaks I'm having to shout at people to pull their finger out, because I didn't know whose fault it was. It happens, it was nothing to do with Sky. You know, the BBC's video printer had stopped as well. So it was the provider. But I didn't know that. So I'm bellowing at everybody, you know, to sort it out. And in the end, there was one of the technical operators was near to me. He'd got a spanner or a wrench or something like that. And we came back from one commercial break, and I've got that wrench in my hand, you know, doing some serious damage, but acting again, obviously, to that video print, you know, so things that are out of your hands sometimes. And you look back and you can laugh at it. But that was a pretty horrific day, yeah, you know. But the boys, generally speaking, they know how to play the game. They know that any disagreement, you know, is done for the show. We've all got passionate views. But once that discussion is over, we're mates, you know, we're just football fans, you know, arguing about football.
Great, and it's great. It's great banter, and it's a joy to watch. Jeff, I just want to just finish by saying thank you so much for coming on our podcast, our Bristol based podcast. We usually have it Bristol centric, but we're branching out now and again. And to get people on like you has been an absolute joy. So thank you very much for joining us, and obviously thank you very much.
Thank you, Rich. Thanks, Pat.
A great honor, Jeff.
And look, if the season gets going again, you know, good luck to City. I shouldn't say this, but I do have soft spots for certain clubs and Bristol City, who've been really supportive during my prostate cancer walks as well, at one of those clubs that I've got a bit of a soft spot for. So fingers crossed.
Well, that's great to hear, and great work, and continue that with prostate cancer. It's
absolutely great.
Very worthy cause. Jeff, thank you very much for joining us, and stay safe, and we will catch you soon. Thanks very much.
You too. Thanks, Jeff.